Welcome to the Region Queens Municipality Regular Council Meeting Tuesday, February 14th.
She's not ready yet.
Oh, Heather's not ready.
I'm not ready.
While she's getting ready, in the absence of our CEO, Chris McNeil, Director McLeod is taking his place. I'm just going to wait for Heather. And another footnote, the electrical for the audio for this room, due to electrician staffing challenges, it will not begin until this Friday. That's been one of the major holdups. We ready, Heather?
Yes.
Okay, so welcome to the Region of Queens Municipalities Regular Council Meeting Tuesday, February 14th, 2023. I'd like to call the meeting to order. I'd first ask for approval of the agenda, and then we can make any changes if so needed. A motion to accept the agenda.
Can we do the...
We don't do the...
Changes first?
Yeah.
Well, the last time we had a motion to accept it, then did amendments. But if you look quizzical, please just move the motion, and then we can have amendments.
Well, it says changes first here.
Okay, are there any changes to the agenda? Councilor Charlton?
Yes, I submitted a written motion on Friday, so there should be under 7.7 recommendations, ask for Peter grant approval.
Yes, and I wrote back to you saying that according to our thing, that should be under a discussion, as it is a major implication to our staffing, and it should go as a discussion. And then I believe Councilor Brown suggested that it should go as well as discussion, and after a discussion, there could be a special council meeting called
at a later date. With all due respect, Mayor Norman, I have followed the proper procedures. I pre-submitted my motion in writing, and I have the option to request this to be added. There's no cost to this motion, therefore it's not substantive. If it was substantive, I also followed the rules of order and gave more than actually 48 hours notice. I'm not withdrawing my request to add this motion.
As you were saying, there will not be any cost to the Region of Queens, then I believe the motion would be in order. Is there a seconder for the motion? Councilor Gidney. Any other changes or approval to the agenda? Councilor Amaro?
I'd like to add an in-camera item, personnel, please.
Pardon?
An in-camera item, personnel.
Any other changes or approval? Any other changes to the agenda? Councilor Muse?
I'd like to add 8.8 library discussion.
With the additions of 8.8, 9.4, and 7.7, are there any other additions to the agenda? If not, I'll call for a motion to accept the agenda. All those in favor? Contrary? Passed. A presentation from Property Valuation Services Corporation, which we know is PVSC, who are here to discuss how that corporation operates in our 2023 assessment role. And gentlemen, if you would kindly introduce yourselves, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Your Worship, and Council, as well as staff. Pleasure to be here this morning. Before I introduce myself, I will give you the award for the most snow this morning from Windsor all the way through to here. I'm Paul Baisley. I've been with PVSC for 7 years now, and I'm the Municipal Accounts Manager. I will mention that I'm quite familiar with the process this morning and those types of things. I was a mayor for the town of Windsor for 8 years and a councilor before that for 4 years, so certainly understand some of the issues, and we talk to the same citizen too, a lot of the people you talk to, we hear from as well, so always great to be here before council.
Thank you.
about the same time, amount of time as Paul. I live on the South Shore as well in Lunenburg County, and assistant director of Roland Data Maintenance with PVSC. So happy to be here, and thanks for taking a couple minutes for us this morning. So without further ado, I'll hand it back to Paul. I'm going to drive the presentation, I think. Paul has about the first half of the slides, and then I have a little bit on the numbers in the second half. Certainly, if you feel you have a pressing question, feel free to jump in at any time. We do have a couple of moments at the end of the presentation as well for questions.
And if we go too long, Your Worship, gavel is out.
I'm sure you'll do it.
All right.
Fine.
Thanks very much.
All right. Well, this morning, we're going to talk a little bit about property assessment in Nova Scotia. We'll go through some numbers on your assessment role. We'll talk about the capped assessment program for a little bit. We usually get a few questions about that. And the inquiry and appeal period, we'll talk about the process involved. However, the appeal period is essentially over now as of February the 9th, but at least you'll understand the process. So, all right, Rod. So PVSC was created under the Property Valuation Service Corporation Act in the early 2000s. We used to be part of the province and were responsible for assessing all the properties in Nova Scotia, some 640,000 of them. As per the Nova Scotia Assessment Act. As council, you're legislated by the Municipal Government Act. We're legislated by our own separate act, the Nova Scotia Assessment Act. We're municipally funded by all 49 municipalities around the province. We're independent. We're a not-for-profit corporation. We're governed by a board of directors. I think there's 10 right now, and some of you may recognize the deputy mayor of Mahone Bay, Joe Feeney. He's our chair as of right now. And we have approximately 130 employees working remotely from 62 communities, but we cover all of Nova Scotia. What we do and what we don't do, PVSC, we do deliver a roll to all 49 municipalities every year by December 31st. That's legislated under the Act. This year we delivered over 640,000 assessment notices in January, just 4 weeks ago. We administer the capped assessment program and seasonal tourist business designation program on behalf of the government of Nova Scotia. It's separate, it's different legislation than ours, but it's included in it, essentially. It's the province's legislation. What we don't do, we don't have the authority to set the tax rates. We don't have the authority to collect taxes. We do not create tax policy, and we do not provide tax relief. All of those functions are under your purview. And legislated under the Municipal Government Act. We do get a lot of questions about people's taxes. As I mentioned, we talk to the same people that you talk to at the grocery store, and they asked us about, or you know, we often hear that, look, my taxes are too high now, or, you know, what can you do to help me out, or whatever, I can't afford it, that type of thing. Well, we can only stick to assessment. So we will talk to them about their property. Is there assessed value where it should be? Are all the characteristics of the property, you know, entered correctly in our records and those types of things? So we will talk about the assessment, but if they want to talk about tax rates and those types of things, we do refer them to the municipality to do so. That's in your bailiwick here. So under the Assessment Act, we're required to assess at market value. And there's a couple of components to that, to the definition or how we set market value. One is the amount in which, in the opinion of the assessor, would be paid for the property if it were sold on a date prescribed by the director. I'll talk about that date in a moment. In the open market by a willing seller and a willing buyer. So we're talking about arm's length transactions, not things, foreclosure sales, typically not arm's length and not open market typically, and things like tax sales and a lot of family sales are not arm's length for sure, and they're usually not at market. So we don't use those in our analysis. We use open market sales to analyze each year to determine what the trends are in the market. much we should adjust or not adjust the values for assessment purposes. The second component is the assessment on the roll should also reflect the state of the property as if it existed, or as it existed on the first day of December prior to the roll. So when we sent out the notices just 4 weeks ago, it was based on the physical state of the property December 1st, just at the end of the year, just a month before. Whereas the market value is actually a year back. So sort of elaborating on that a little bit, the important dates, the base date is January 1st, 2022. That's for the 2023 roll, so we're back 1 year, January 1st, 2022. We also talk about the base year. All the value as at the base date, January 1st, is based on the sales that took place over the 2021 calendar year. So the base year is 2021. We look at all the sales that occurred in that calendar year, and we determine which direction the market is going. And we use that to set the market value as of January 1st. Then there's the state date, which is the physical characteristics of the property on December the 1st. So that allows us to go from the January 1st market value and then pick up the physical characteristics of the property right up to the date before the roll is created for things such as building permits, inspections, those types of things. So we make sure that we capture that value for any new construction on the roll as of December the 1st. So that culminates in the assessment roll. We sent the notices out January 9th. I'm sure, if not all of you, most of you received your notice right around the middle of January. And then that starts the appeal period. The appeal period starts the date that they're mailed out, January 9th. And property owners have 31 days to consider whether they want to appeal or not. And they must submit it within those 31 days. So that was by February the 9th. So that appeal cutoff date just went by a week ago. So continuing on the theme of market value, and I won't spend much time on this slide, it goes without saying there's a number of factors that influence market value, but when you think about when the pandemic hit in the last 2 years, I think supply and demand were definitely the overriding influences. There was a shortage of supply in many things, such as labor, construction materials, and properties. Just simply, there were not enough properties for those people that were looking for property. And then, of course, the demand was very high during that period. And three ways that we look at properties in order to determine market value. There's three internationally accepted valuation methods we use. We use mass appraisal, but we do use each of these valuation methods, some of them in combination with each other, but essentially sales comparison. We analyze recent sales. We had some 40,000 sales last year. We take a look at them all, or in 2021, we take a look at them all. Are they arm's length open market sales? Are they not? And then we analyze them to determine which way the markets are going. The income approach, we determine the income of a property can earn, and then we convert the net operating income to market value. So the value of the property is hinged on the income that it earns or the income potential. Things like apartment buildings, things like retail strip malls, things like hotels, motels, office buildings that are used or that are valued based on how much money they generate and what's the bottom line. So we convert that into a value. And we use the cost method where you simply calculate the land value and the current cost to replace the building or the cost to build the building, then deduct for depreciation. Older buildings are a little tougher because you got to gauge the depreciation, like how much is this property depreciated or how much is this building depreciated. But pretty straightforward for newer buildings to say this is what it would cost to build it, here's what the land's worth, that's the cost that goes on the roll. So market value, think back to 2021. It was well into the pandemic, a full year of pandemic was going on at that time. So I kind of kind of what happened as far as market values go. So on this slide, our data scientist wanted to monitor what happened through that, or what would happen through the COVID period. So they went back to 2013. So on the far left is 2013, and they looked at all the historic sales, and they also tried to, or they sort of looked at anticipated versus historic. So you'll see where it says 2014 on that bottom line, there's actually two lines. There's a black one and a red one. It's a little hard to see. They both are very close together, actual versus anticipated sales across the province. So it's up and down a little bit for seasonality during those first few years. So 2014, 2016, pretty flat, 2018, pretty flat. And then you get to 2020, starts going up a little bit as you head into 2020. So what would have been anticipated continues on through to 2021 and 2022 on that slight upslope. Red line is what would have been anticipated, but what actually happened are the black dots and the black line that diverges and goes steeply upward. So through at the start of 2020, when COVID first hit, through all of 2021 and into the middle of 2022, it was upward sharply. When we hit the middle of 2022, it started to drop. So, but what I want to point out here is the two orange or brownish colored goalposts there in the middle. That represents the calendar year of 2021. So what the assessment rolls for 2023 were based on, or what it reflects, is that market increase through that period, those that black line going up very steeply. So that's what market values are based on for the 2023 roll, that calendar year. And here's what you were reading about back in 2021, just to keep your mind on 2021. Soaring material costs, home prices remain high. Busiest year ever for housing, market prices up 18%. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Rod, and he's going to take you through some numbers and talk a little bit about the CAT.
Thank you, Paul. Excuse me. So the next couple of slides talk a little bit more specifically about the region of Queens and your numbers year over year. I'm going to add a little bit of context to this next slide in terms of what it means in relation to previous assessment years as well. We just did a little bit of extra research to sort of place this into how you fit sort of within the province and within the municipality when compared to previous years. So total assessed value in the region of Queens is $1.78 billion. The vast majority of that is residential assessment. So the residential tax rate is being applied. It's property with residential use. That's $1.58 billion total residential. When we calculate cap into it, so that's sort of what we call it, the cap impact. So some properties have a capped assessment that is lower than their assessed value for a given year. We'll talk a bit more about that in future slides. Many of you are probably familiar with it on your own property. When we take that into account on the residential assessment, it reduces that amount to $1.336 billion with caps. So what that means is that's the amount of sort of taxable residential dollars that are available to the municipality. The commercial assessment role, as is consistent with many more rural municipalities within the province of Nova Scotia, it's a smaller percentage of the total assessment role, so $207 million overall. And just looking at previous years, the overall residential assessment lift for Queens was 20.8% for 2023. That's up from 5% in 2022 and 2.2% in 2021. So we're seeing sort of significant market growth based on that market in 2021 for this year. When we add cap into the equation, we have a 14.2% market lift for 2023 in Queens, or lift including the cap. For 2022, that was 8.5%. So a significant increase there as well. Looking at commercial assessment, the overall commercial lift was just under the average for the province at 6.8%. The province was just over 7%. And your taxable lift was a little bit greater at 14.6% in the region of Queens. And in 2022, there actually was a small decrease to the commercial assessed value in Queens. So this is a significant increase over last year's increase. One more stat I'll add on this page before I go into permits and property transactions. The percentage of properties that are capped within the region. So often when we apply significant market changes to assessments based on that base year sales activity in 2021 and what we understand the market to be doing as of the end of 2021, when we apply larger increases, as I just mentioned, 20%, over 20% this year in Queens versus 5% in the previous year, more properties come onto the cap. So the cap becomes an advantage for more properties. So we see the number of properties receiving a cap in the region of Queens, and this is consistent with the rest of the province, increase year over year. So in 2022, 62% of residential properties were capped in the region of Queens. In 2023, that number is now 82%. And the main reason for that is because of the significant market increase. So all of the capped assessments in the province were increased by they're increased annually by the Consumer Price Index, which this year was 7.7%. So when we say the average residential property increased around 20%, to many folks will benefit from that 7.7% increase. So because the cap was increased significantly less than the market, and again, that's consistent with the province-wide increase for residential, what that means is more properties come onto the cap. So other reasons why assessments can change. Paul mentioned briefly we do have a look at all of the building permits that we receive from all of the 49 municipalities in Nova Scotia. Our assessors review those building permits to determine if it's appropriate to change the assessed value of that property based on the physical changes that are taking place there. So the easiest example is a new construction. So where a property is a vacant piece of land, assessed as a vacant piece of land, and then someone builds a house on it, we adjust based on our understanding of what physically sits on that property as of December 1st prior to the roll. So in Queens County, there was 229 building permits last year, and those would have been permits that we reviewed for a change in value. Sometimes a building permit can generate a reduction in value. An example would be a demolition permit, whereby an improvement, a dwelling or building is removed from a property, or a dwelling or building is removed due to a fire. These are reasons why we might reduce an assessment due to a building permit. And then we also review things like change in use permits to make a classification determination as well. So property moving from a commercial use to a residential use, or from a residential use to a commercial use for the next filed roll year. And that information is based on our understanding of the use of that property as of December 1st, prior to the assessment notices going out. So for this year, December 1st of 2022. There was 992 qualified property transactions in the region of Queens used for this year's assessment. So these are sales that occurred in the 2021 calendar year. And this would not be all of the transactions, but rather the number of transactions that were reviewed by our assessors. Each transaction is reviewed to determine if it represents good market evidence, if it represents the market. And there was 992 of those sales. That would be both residential and commercial within the region of Queens. We had 182 assessment appeals in 2022. We don't have our final number. We just finished the appeal period, as Paul mentioned, last week on February 8th. And we don't have a final tally for appeals yet. But what I can say is that basically we understand that appeals typically increase as market values increase. So since we're seeing a 20% average increase on the residential side versus 5% in the year before, we certainly expect an increased appeal volume. And we don't have a final number yet provincially or for Queens County, but we would expect to see some uptick in that 182 figure for this year, just on the basis of the market increases that have been applied, as well as the cap CPI increase. So I'll just touch briefly on some of the commercial sector. So commercial, I mentioned, was up just over 7% province-wide on average. When we look at individual sectors, there was quite a bit of difference in performance. So multifamily property, we value most multifamily property on the income approach, as Paul mentioned. We convert an expected revenue stream less expenses and work that back using a cap rate to determine the market value for that property. What can an investor expect to earn on that property? Because of the really strong demand for housing throughout the province, the multifamily sector has been very, very strong. Multifamily properties in Queens and elsewhere in the province are almost universally classed as residential property because it's occupied for a residential use, although many of these larger properties are held as part of a larger investment portfolio by investors, as many of you are aware. Office and industrial also saw really strong growth throughout the province. You don't have a lot of that type of improvement in Queens, but I just wanted to talk on it a little bit. Sort of the larger business parks in the province saw a lot of demand for industrial related to increased demand for warehouse space for online shopping and this type of thing. as well as the office sector has remained relatively flat, obviously due to COVID. Our accommodation sector, so resorts, hotels, motels, sort of traditional accommodation, has remained still sort of in recovery mode from COVID. So what we're seeing is we didn't have a lot of market evidence to move those classes of property. So in commercial property, how the property is valued and the use of the property can make a very significant impact on whether that property's value would have moved year over year. So there's significant differences within different sectors of commercial property is the main sort of tone of this slide, I suppose. Thank you, sir. I'll talk a little bit about the CAPT assessment program. As Paul mentioned, we usually get a few questions on this, so certainly happy to talk about CAPT. I do a lot of work with the CAPT assessment program on a daily basis, so I hope I can answer whatever gets thrown at me. Provincial legislation puts a cap on eligible property which limits taxable value increases. This is Section 45 of the Assessment Act. So CAP can be somewhat misleading in the sense that the word CAP is in my mind sort of a great marketing tool because it creates the expectation that an assessment will never change. But part of Section 45, part of that CAP legislation, is that the CAP rate is applied to all of the CAP assessments in the program annually. So the CAP rate is based on the Nova Scotia Consumer Price Index as established by Statistics Canada, provided to us by the Nova Scotia government annually each November. We take that CPI that we are provided and apply it uniformly to all of the CAP assessments in the province should they meet the other eligibility criteria. So what that means is everyone who has a CAP, if they don't have a physical change to their property, the percentage increase year over year should they continue to be capped is the same as everyone else in the province. Whereas with assessments, where it's based on the market, your assessed value can potentially be somewhat different in different areas depending on the market area in which that property is located. Account eligibility for CAP is determined on PVSC based on legislative criteria. I won't list everything in detail, but basically needs to be owned by an individual as opposed to a business, has to be residential property, 3 units or less, and you have to be a resident of Nova Scotia for 6 months or greater, and the ownership has to be at least 50% owned by a Nova Scotia resident, so someone who is ordinarily resident in the province. So I have a sample of a relatively straightforward 2023 assessment notice here. Many of you are very likely in the possession of these. So assessment notices, as they have in previous years, have 5 columns on them. I won't get into detail in terms of what each column means individually, but rather the purpose of this slide is to explain the difference between assessed value, capped assessment, and taxable assessed value. So in this case, this is very likely a residential property. The assessed value is $416,800 in the second column. So what that means is that's the value based on an understanding of what physically existed on that property as of December 1st, 2022, based on the market as of the end of 2021. That's what we're determining that property to be worth, $416,800. The capped assessment is $372,300. So where that number comes from, we don't have enough information in the slide to determine what the cap base year is. But basically, where that $372,300 comes from 2023 is a previous year's assessment brought forward by the Consumer Price Index. So if this property owner has been eligible for CAP since last year, it would be last year's assessed value plus 7.7%. If they've been eligible for 10 years, it might be their 2013 assessed value brought forward by the Consumer Price Index annually. So the way I always explain it to property owners is, if you imagine CAP is a snapshot of your assessed value as of a certain date, and that date is determinant on how long you've been in the program, how long you've been eligible, which typically directly corresponds to how long you've owned your property. Most transactions reset the CAP assessment. The exception is a family transaction where it's a direct family member, so child, parent, grandparent, sibling, essentially. Those types of transactions, regardless of how much money is changing hands, whether it's $0 or market value, that transaction, if you can establish that family relationship, is typically eligible for the previous owner's cap to carry forward with the new owner. In market transactions, what happens is the property is not eligible in the year following purchase. So if you purchased last year, you wouldn't see a capped assessment on this year's assessment notice. There's 2 reasons for that. One is we need something to base the future cap on. So the cap essentially would be equal or greater than the assessed value anyway. There would be no advantage to it. The other reason is it allows us to review the data on the property. assess there and make sure it's correct. So we review that sale and say, do we have everything assessed correctly before we cap it and sort of lock it into that program? And then that owner would expect to see a cap the following year, presuming that the market moves in excess of the consumer price index. Both of those are unknown at that point, at this point. So if the market is flat and moves only 3% and the consumer price index is 5%, it's possible that the cap won't show on the notice because it's of no benefit to that property owner. So basically, the taxable assessed value is always the lower of the two. Cap displays on your notice when it is to your benefit. If your cap is greater than your assessed value, any future caps are calculated on the lower of the two. So if this property were to be assessed for $325,000 in 2023, the capped assessment wouldn't print on the notice even though the property is eligible because the cap is greater than market. Next year's cap will be based on that lower number, the $325,000. So it's always resetting to the lower number, and it's always to your benefit. So if a cap is not printing on the notice, in most cases, either because the property is not eligible or because it's not to your benefit to have it. The taxable assessed value, again, is the lower of the two. That's the last column on the far right. So in this case, the cap assessment is to the benefit of this property owner. Their taxable assessed value is $372,300 for 2023. I'm going to talk a little bit about the appeal process because of the date of our presentation day, February 14th. I think we've mentioned a couple of times already that the appeal process for this year, that 31-day period pursuant to Section 63 of the Assessment Act, has passed. It was last Thursday. This information is contained on all assessment notices that were mailed out in the province of Nova Scotia. We have three levels of appeal. So the initial assessor review, this typically results in a phone call to a property owner to discuss the grounds of appeal, get a little bit more detail, make sure the data we have on the account is correct, and understand why the property has been appealed. The assessor at that time, of course, can speak to property owners and explain a little bit more about the appeal process. Once we have that information, our assessors go back to our sales file and have a look at the market evidence to determine, does that assessed value fall within the typical range or does it not? Or if there's a data issue, so an example is a property's been demolished and we have it assessed on the roll because we perhaps have not been notified of that demolition, or a manufactured home that's been moved and we were not aware of that as of December 1st. Those are examples of appeals that typically would be allowed to make it what we call a data change. If the appeal relates to value, the test is market value, as Paul mentioned. So what the assessor is going to do is determine, do we feel you could sell the property based on our understanding of what physically exists there? Do we feel you could sell it at the end of 2021 for what it's assessed for? If the answer is yes, then it's difficult for us to be able to move that assessment. If the answer is no, then we may sort of have a further conversation about an amended assessment. So we're required to send written notice to all appellants. So all appellants who have appealed receive either a written confirmation notice indicating that the assessment is not changing, or a notice of amended assessment with a new assessed value on it. In those cases, in the vast lion's share, it's typically a lower assessed value. If a property owner continues to be dissatisfied with the result of the appeal process at that level, it's possible to, within 14 days, continue to the Nova Scotia Assessment Appeal Tribunal. This is a third-party organization where a virtual hearing will be scheduled with a court chair who will hear both from the property owner, hear their grounds, and then hear from the respondent, which is representative of the Director of Assessment, typically one of our assessors, who will present a report from PVSC indicating why they feel the value is appropriate for that property, and a written decision that is binding on PVSC will be issued. So if the court chair recommends that the value be reduced, we will reduce the value for that specific assessment roll year. There is a third level of appeal as well in the province of Nova Scotia. So if a property owner continues to be dissatisfied with the results of the written NSAT decision from the court chair, it is possible to further formalize an appeal to the Nova Scotia Utility and Review Board as well. So our contact information is here. This is all on our website as well at pvsc.ca. We certainly encourage property owners to give us a call anytime to discuss their assessment, and it doesn't have to be within the appeal period. So we currently are working in the 2024 assessment roll, preparing that assessment roll. We're just getting into the beginning of our reassessment to determine where the market is going to move for next year. So we can always talk about property assessments. Outside of the appeal period, it's difficult to make changes for that existing year because the appeal period is past that statutory requirement, the 31 days. But we can always take a look at assessments for the following assessment. questions for us, we always encourage folks to give us a call, and we have assessors available on the phone every day throughout the year, typically a couple of assessors province-wide who are available to take calls, and certainly they can discuss with the assessor for that area as well to determine if there's a change that's warranted. So I'll open up the floor for questions. Again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Beasley and Tremblay. Council, do you have any questions? Councilor Fancy. Deputy Mayor Fancy.
A couple of your slides, when you showed your data insight and also too with the sales comparison, we saw that by the end of 2021, first of 2022, this is based upon, right? So we could see where the price of the housing was, and then it took the high peak, and it seemed to come back down to almost that same spot, and those were the dots to where it was. So if we were looking at it today, and we were looking at it for next year, it would be pretty well on the same scale, rather than catch that high peak. And if it goes down lower, it's only to our advantage, right?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on the perspective, so to speak, but as to advantage or not advantage, those types of things. But definitely we're getting into the review of those sales. Yes, it appears like it went up steeply still and then came right back down.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know yet. We don't want to speculate or forecast. The one thing we do have is the benefit of hindsight, because we look 1 year back. So we're looking at the actual sales that occurred in the calendar date 2022, and we'll see if it holds to the sort of the value of that. One thing we don't like to do on assessments is have that big up and down.
No.
Because, you know, it's similar to, you don't like to see budgets that have big up and downs, because you got a plan. The preponderance of the evidence, we'll take a look at it for that period, but it is an interesting slide in that it does show that the market has certainly seemed to have gone in a different direction for that second half of 2022. It also depends on the number of sales, seasonality, like you saw a lot of the ups and downs along the way of that. So a lot of times the first half of the year is where most of the sales occur, like April, May, June, July. So if the abundance of sales most of the sales were in that first half, that might skew it. there may have been fewer sales in the second half. I don't know, but I'll be interested to see in and around November, December of this year as to where the numbers kind of fall out. And it does take us a good 6 months to go through some 45,000 sales, 45,000 sales for sure.
I think to get back to the graph too, like, we want to find that trend line.
Yes.
So, you know, we have those ups and downs throughout the year, but we want to follow the trend, follow the market, but be as consistent as possible. But as Paul mentioned, it's difficult to predict. So the fortunate thing about being an appraiser and or assessor is that you're able to use past evidence to generate assessment value. So we have those sales. When we prepare the assessment roll, we have that sales file. We can look at that sort of hard evidence, closed sales that have been determined to be representative of the market in a given area. And that's what we use to sort of make that determination.
And the other thing, it depends on the area too. Like we base our market movements on, essentially we do municipality by municipality, but we even do neighborhood by neighborhood. So one neighborhood may have lots of sales, and we can really, and that really determine, you know, sort of where it's moving, whereas other neighborhoods may not have many sales at all, so it's kind of hard to determine where it's going. So, and a lot is driven, like a lot of the numbers are also driven by, the mass of HRM as well. So some municipalities are not as much, some are higher, some are lower. This year, some of the smaller municipalities were higher. Annapolis Royal was high, Home Bay was high.
Because we're reaching a sufficient volume to be able to support an adjustment. So if there's a lack of information, you know, we're using the best information that we have to make adjustments. So in a given municipality, if the information is less reliable, we feel less comfortable making a movement, because we have to be able to defend those market movements as well, right?
Also, too, I think by looking at it, having the cap on is a saving grace for us all, and makes it better for you fellows even, because everything would've been a real yo-yo if you didn't have a cap on, wouldn't it?
The cap, you know, as you know, the cap has been debated. We're not here to debate the cap by any means, one way or another. We just administer the cap program, but the cap was meant to be a break, you know, tap the brakes if things are moving too quickly. This year, the brakes get tapped. Last year, to a certain extent, the brakes get tapped because of that big upward momentum you saw. So in other years, you know, maybe the brakes get tapped when they shouldn't have been tapped, you know, those types of things. So you know, we have, like, the CPI over the past 6 years, in 2018, it was 0.9%, so it was less than 1%. 2.9% in 2019, 1% in 2020, 0.3% in 2021. Then the pandemic came along and things changed. It went to 5.4% and 7.7%. So in those years where the cap is really low, do you really need to tap the brake anymore? You know, that's the debate that kind of goes on. So anyways.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
So I had a few calls from people, and they tell me that a house was sold and it was assessed at $250, and when they sold it for $350, but their assessment didn't change. Is there a reason that doesn't change, except for, and I know that the places that they called me told me about, there was no family involved, so can you explain how that could get by?
I'll let Rod take calls like this all the time.
So I think, without knowing the exact situation, I can just sort of make a couple of general comments, I guess, to help understand why that might be. So if we're talking about cap, it depends if we're talking about a cap assessment or an assessed value, right? So if an assessed value doesn't change or changes not as significantly as the difference between sale price and the assessed value for that year, it could be due to the base date. So a property that's sold in 2022 is not effectively in the pot for this year's assessments because we cut it off at the end of 2021. So if we have that, if that sale sold, that may potentially affect assessments generally in that area, that assessment included, in 2024, because it's within that base year if it's sold in 2022. Oftentimes people provide sort of the opposite example, whereby a property is purchased, there's a significant difference between assessed value and sale price, and then sort of the following year, they see a sort of closing of that gap significantly. So in your example, the property would show up on this year's assessment roll assessed at $330 when it was sold for $350, last year it was assessed at $250 or something. So typically what that's a result of is what we call data correction. So we review the sale. In the vast lion's share of cases in residential property, we have a multiple listing service listing cut. Many of you familiar with Viewpoint, with a set of photos, which we take with a grain of salt, of course, understanding that it's prepared for marketing purposes. But it usually is quite a comprehensive list of upgrades that have been done to the home. And we don't necessarily adjust assessments for things like typical maintenance. But if we understand based on a listing that there's a bit of finished, 1,000 square feet of basement finish added to a property, and we've never had, say, a building permit or any reason to understand that that exists within the walls of that home, many of you are familiar with this type of stuff, and so what happens at that time is we're sort of required to correct that assessment. So when we make those data changes, often that can close the gap significantly between it. But in your example, where there hasn't been a significant change and there's still that gap between sale price and assessment, I would say most of that gap is likely due to market activity, and we might expect to see some of that gap closed in the following assessment roll year based on the date of the sale. Does that answer your question?
Sort of, I guess, yeah. Okay.
I think the other thing is I don't think you would be surprised the last couple of years of the number of calls we would get that would say, I bought a sight unseen, I didn't know the area, nobody told me about this, and it's not worth what I bought it for. And, you know, so those types of things too. And, there were probably a number of properties out there that sold that you or I, or those that know the area a little better, would say, I don't think that was market. I think that was above market.
It's better it gets back to that.
A lot of desperate people are trying to buy their properties because they just couldn't get any, and I know you heard about the bidding wars that are out there, and that's not reflective of the market necessarily in these instances where it's a short term type of thing. So, you know, we have to look at those too and determine whether they fall within the range of what
and they may be qualified sales, but they would be in a range of other sales. So we would take all the sales that occurred in an area, including private sales that maybe weren't listed and maybe weren't in perfect condition or sort of polished to sell, let's say. And sort of we take that range. So we wouldn't qualify an extremely low sale where there was extraneous motivation. So someone who was desperate to get rid of a property and it was our understanding that those were the conditions. But a private sale can be a market sale. It depends on the condition of the property. In many cases, you know, if someone's selling a property as part of an estate or something, if it's marketed, it could be a market sale. It would just represent the bottom end of the market. And some of these overpayments, perhaps from an out-of-province buyer who hasn't done as much due diligence as would be happening typically in the local market, may represent some overpayment. But it sort of depends how many of those sales occurred in an area as well. So if there's a vast number of those sales, then it is pulling that market evidence up. But it's tempered by what's at the bottom of the market. We're sort of looking at everything and trying to understand what's the overall trend here and move the assessments on that basis.
And we're using averages too. We're mass appraisal. We'll get some high, we'll get some low, but when you work out the averages, some will be kind of the outliers on either side. They're still good sales, but and we use them in our analysis, but we're dealing with 640,000 across the province, and we're taking averages within municipalities typically.
Councillor Brown, an understanding, we're 45 minutes into this presentation, and we have yet another presentation,
I'll be quick. I was just going to say that I understand that some areas really get hit harder than others. I live in a cottage country area, and speaking for myself, for my taxes, without any building permits or anything, my home went up 65%, and the vacant property I have next door went up 130% with no changes. But that was all market driven. And it's, you know, we've had some severe market corrections out there, and a lot of people bought in cottage country.
You're probably in the sort of LaBelle-Mullaghan area or something.
That's exactly where.
It's the demand. I mean, it's been, I used to do quite a bit of private appraisal work before I was involved with PVSC as well as assessment work in that area. And I remember, you know, the difference in demand from sort of 2017-18 to now is unbelievable with how many folks from the city seem to be willing to drive a little further to get that lakefront lot and a little bit of foreign demand as well. So certainly things like rural internet and the ability of folks to work from home in those desirable areas has become, you know, obviously a big market driver. So certainly it's got to do with that volume of sales too. So suddenly we have this wealth of evidence and it becomes impossible to ignore the evidence. It's just like the property with the finished basement, whereby if we were unaware of it, you know, we don't inspect the interior of every single property annually. We use the best information we have. But once that information becomes available to us, we've got to correct the account. Same goes for sales data. If all of a sudden we have 10 lakefront lot sales that are 120,000 and we have the lots assessed for 60, we've got to make that significant change. We may not go all the way based on the sort of average or the median of a range of sales, but when we get that sufficient evidence, we've got to sort of follow that trend and move with that trend, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Made me happy that my base year was 20 years ago.
That's the highest assessment district in the region of Queens with the least amount of services. Any other questions? If not, I thank you for that very in-depth presentation. And if any councillors or members here today or guests wish to contact you, they know where to reach you.
Yes,
thank you.
Mallory has our number. I can assure you of that.
I've memorized.
So, Your Worship, thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Council.
Thank you very much.
You.
This morning.
Thanks
thank
for
you. Having us.
And, good luck with your budgeting program.
3.2, Recreation and Culture Communities Department update. So following our engineering department, which did the same, we're doing yearly updates from the departments. So council and to follow, have an understanding of what is the work completed within the departments. So, Ms. Robertson, Ms. Halliday.
So I brought Kim with me today. I didn't bring all of our department managers, but certainly if there's any questions at the end that I'm not able to answer, we can certainly find out the answers and bring them back at that time. Apologize for my voice. I will do my best to get through this. So we're here today to do our department update for the Department of Recreation and Healthy Communities. So that involves our recreation department as well as the recreational aspects of Queen's Place. So we're just gonna provide that general update of what our department does and kind of what's happened this past year. And at the end, there'll be time for questions if anybody has them. So just kind of a general overview of what our staff does, you know, day-to-day operations in Queen's Place. Seasonally, we do our aquatic facilities, Council, public relations and customer service, our physical activity strategy, community development, our community investment fund. We acquire and manage staff and resources and manage initiatives, grants, and services. So on the day-to-day, in all of our departments, there's administration, aquatics. While it's seasonal, there's still things we have to prepare and do and plan for all during the year. We do equipment loans, our physical activity strategy, we implement our community investment fund, we have Recreation for All, management of Queen's Place for our recreational aspects that fall under recreation. We have Queen's Place Ice Rentals, and then our memberships and programs that take place at Queen's Place. So for administration for Queen's Place, we have myself, the Director of Recreation and Healthy Communities. Steve Burns is listed here. He does not fall under Recreation and Healthy Communities. However, he has functions of his job that are directly related to Queen's Place, which is why he's listed on this slide, because we do work with him on a daily basis. And then we have Matt Van Wyschen. He's our fitness coordinator, and he has three staff that work in his department. Judith Mossman is our customer service manager, and she has four staff that work in her department. We have Dana Henley, who's our community development coordinator, and has two staff that work under the EIC. We have Kim Halliday, who's our physical activity coordinator, and then seasonally we have our aquatics coordinator, and we normally, when we're fully staffed, have seven staff that fall under our aquatics facilities. And this just kind of gives very high level overview of each person. So for Steve, he does our special events at Queen's Place, advertising and promotion, our facility contract development, and general oversight. However, all staff at Queen's Place end up doing the implementation of any contracts that are in place. Matt, in our fitness center, oversees everything in the fitness center. He does community outreach and partnership, and all of our fitness center programs and services. Judith Mossman oversees our customer service desk, and in large part what they do is customer service, but they also do all of our memberships, ICE, room rentals, and general administration, and they're the first point of contact in the facility. For myself, it's total department oversight, and then Queen's Place, recreation, and our two aquatics facilities and everything that that entails. Dana Henley, who's our community development coordinator, she implements our community investment fund every day. She does our visitor information centers. She has four facilities that fall under her, economic development, engineering, public works and grounds, and she is, for elections, our deputy returning officer, so that's not a all the time thing, but when it happens, it takes a lot of time. And Kim, who's our physical activity coordinator, she implements our physical activity strategy. Her job falls under the Municipal Physical Activity Leadership Program, and that's partially funded by the province, and Kim will talk a bit more about that later. And then she also has committees and partnerships that are part of her day. So then just for administration, on a day-to-day, we public inquiries in customer service, file reporting, human resources, and of course we do that in coordination with our director of corporate services. We have leases and agreements, licensing and memberships, and budgeting and oversight.
Ms. Roberts, may I suggest?
Yes.
Since council, we all have the list of your responsibilities in front of us, and
I'm
we've had this
all.
For several days.
Yes.
So if anyone, perhaps to save her voice, if anyone has any specific questions about any of those, rather than have her go through and have to read them all, if anyone has any specific questions, perhaps just ask her of them, and then we can flip on to Kim,
mm-hmm.
Halliday. Who can perhaps better explain her role that people may not be as familiar with?
And
is that okay with you?
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly wasn't going to read them all, but that's even better.
Yeah. So does anyone have any specific questions about any of those responsibilities? I know you would have asked Ms. Roberts in the past. Okay, so we can flip on to Ms. Halliday.
Thursday and kind of runs them
just engaging community and consultation, kind of doing a midway check-in point for our physical activity strategy, just seeing where we land on that aspect, what we need to do in order to kind of complete this round of physical activity strategy, and just hear what they, what barriers that might be, they might be facing, or what they want to see in their communities. And I've had really good feedback so far, and it's we also did a Pilates try-it. We have an instructor who lives part-time in Liverpool, so Marcy Rose came up, I think it was end of August to October, and so we did a couple sessions at Seaside Center, which were very well received. We had an average of 10 participants per class, which was incredible. And then we also did one at Queen's Place. We tried to go to Greenfield, but I think there was some scheduling conflict there, so something I'll definitely look at in the future. But yeah, really good feedback from that, and the participants really liked it. Good to know. We also, in partnership with the South Shore Public Libraries and MODL, or Municipality of the District of Lunenburg, I've been working with them to kind of put together a hike bag. So this will be seasonal as well. So right now we have ice grippers, we have cool little flashing lights, we're getting maps of all the facilities and trails in both MODL and in Queens to kind of encourage people to go out in winter and be safe when they're hiking or walking around. We also got trail counters this year. So this is really important, especially if we're looking at active transportation and kind of that data collection as well. So just getting more of that. We have two infrared counters that count pedestrians. And then we have one magnetic counter that counts like ATVs or bicycles. And so we also have, within that package, we have a subscription to, like, they have a whole website dedicated to data storage. So it just gets uploaded automatically, or you can go out with a USB stick, download the information, and you have it all right there. We are doing, accessible equipment loan expansion. There we go. So this year we are looking at getting a Mobi mat. The beach is always changing, so as if we can make that more accessible or further down, then that's why we did that. And then we also got a beach walker. So if you have mobility issues and can't go on the beach without support, it's there. It'll be there for use. And we also got some walking poles. So if you're walking but need the extra stability, we'll have a couple of those for loan. And sensory ball kits. So they're just from Flag House. They're just a mixture of different types of balls. And you can loan them out. You can play with them. Yeah. We're also looking at getting bikes for loan. So we purchased 2 adult bikes and 2 youth bikes. And safety gear, so reflective guest, bike lock, bike lights, adjustable helmets, so it fits a variety of people. So that will be for loan through me and our equipment loan. And then just different Queens Walk initiatives to encourage movement. So we're doing our storybook trail for Pine Grove Park in the summer. And I'm working with Hike Nova Scotia on doing like a geocaching badge to get people out and collecting geocaching and stuff like that, kind of unstructured again. So that's all under ACF. And a couple of the other grants that we've applied to is the after school physical activity on the South Shore. So this kind of, since we don't have a before and after program here, this funding became available, I think this is the first year, and I applied for it to get my Leaders on the Move. So I'm doing that in South Queens and North Queens. And basically it's just providing opportunities for students to be physically active after school, but also give them leadership opportunities. So whether that's a food handler's course that they wanted, which is coming up, or babysitting, or first aid, it's kind of Better Challenge, which happens in June. I've applied for that again this year. We did walk or ride to school last year, and it was hugely successful, so that was really good to be a part of and see the community come together, and it was a really fun walk. And then just committees, partnerships.
We'll go over those when we get to that slide.
Exactly. And then for workshops and trainings, I've done two food handlers course right now. I'm organizing a babysitting course for March 22nd, and we tried to put on a first aid course back in November, but there was little participation, so unfortunately that couldn't go ahead. But that's something else I organize. And then any most things you see on Facebook, I'm marketing and promoting, and then grant preparation and implementation, so that's ACF, or the after school program one, or participation.
That's Kim.
That's me.
So next would be our community development coordinator, and again, I'm not going to go over everything because you had those slides, but this just gives a general overview, so everything from community investment fund to facilities to websites to support to not only recreation and economic development, because this position is shared 50-50, but I don't really feel like it's 50-50 because Dana does so much for all departments. And again, our fitness coordinator, so Matt oversees our entire fitness department. So they do everything from all of our programming in there. We bring in very few outside contracted people. We have a few that come in to teach classes, but otherwise they do all of our programming in there. And they're also, on top of that, responsible for the cleanliness of the fitness center, so that falls to those staff. But their duties are widespread.
And I noticed in our financial report that the membership is up, private training is up.
Yep, personal training is up.
There's been a good positive increase in that fitness coordinator department of Queen's Place, so that's a good thing.
Absolutely. And our customer service manager, so they're more the administrative parts of Queen's Place, but so this is the customer service manager plus obviously all of the staff that work there. So while these things might not be direct responsibilities that the customer service manager does, they're responsible for overseeing them. So there's a lot that happens at our front desk, from, you know, general customer service to memberships, bookings, handing out dressing room keys, you know, answering the phone, inquiries. They kind of do it all. And Judith, on top of that, also oversees, she does the inventory and deposits for the bar, the vending machines, in coordination with Steve. So we have two people that do that. You know, organizing the staffing for the bar as well. So kind of some highlights just from this last year. And I didn't put any comparative numbers on for a reason, because being the first real year out of COVID, it's kind of hard to compare anything to what happened in the past at this point. But for our ICE rentals, for example, they're on track to be one of the best years we've had. You know, a lot of things came back this year, so it's been really positive that way. Our room rentals, it's the same situation for both our paid and our not-for-profit. So as you all know, we provide up to 4 hours for not-for-profit organizations a month at Queen's Place, and it's obviously highly used. Same thing with our fitness memberships. As Mayor Norman mentioned, everything's up. And so these are memberships processed. So this could be day passes. We have various membership options, and that's just the number that we've processed at the front desk. Personal training packages, the highest number we've had really since I can remember was probably about 20 in a year, so we're at 67 at this point. So I think that speaks to our current staff and their expertise in that area. Same thing, inner door track. And one of the things we always plan to do is in the summer, when folks have dry wells, is to provide public showers, and that's something we're certainly planning to do again this year, probably offering it as soon as we can. I think sometimes we wait until the need's there, and sometimes you can do it beforehand, so that's something we're certainly looking at. So that's just a high-level overview. Again, no administrative and other questions. Recreation infrastructure projects, so this past year had Beach Meadows Beach and Etley Maledum, Queens Universally Designed Play Park, which is still in the process, both of those are being completed. Aquatics highlights, that just overviews the number at each pool and then the different programming that we were able to offer. Again, it's the first year out of kind of COVID with restrictions, so a lot of people's habits changed over COVID. So I think it'll take a little bit of time to get back to where we were, but we're certainly well on our way. And this past year we had to change from Red Cross, which was our historical provider for swimming lessons. Everything went to Life Saving Society. So it was a bit of a learning curve this year for everybody, just to get that program completely changed over and get everyone used to the new program. But the new program is really great. I think it has some really great opportunities, especially in the training and mentorship part of it. So those are things we're working on the board. And this, Kim's going to speak just very quickly to this. She's not going to read them all, but this just highlights her committees that she's part of.
Yeah, so most of these are like really good networking opportunities, just meeting with different people from different sectors and kind of getting a feel for what's going on in Queens. So like the Queens County Community Health Board, I just sit on that as a kind of guest. So I give updates on recreational opportunities happening in Queens, what I'm working on and stuff like that. It's usually a monthly evening meeting, and then I also get to hear in return the priorities of the health board, which is super important. And Hub to Interagency is just another one where we give updates what's going on in the region, but there's multiple sectors at the table with that one too. So there's Schools Plus, Nova Scotia Health, YMCA, Employment Solutions, the South Shore Regional Center for Education, Autism Nova Scotia, and stuff like that.
And maybe in the interest of time, if you have any questions about what we do on these committees, you can certainly ask that at the end. And again, with partnerships, if anyone has any questions about kind of the partnerships or the opportunities we're working on with those, certainly Kim can explain more on those. This slide just highlights again the things Kim talked about at the beginning, all the things we did under our Active Communities Fund, and the other programming and items that she's done. So those are things that would have been included in our budget, but sometimes are just part of a budget line and you don't necessarily know exactly what we've done as part of it. So it just highlights that. Just a summary of our community investment fund from this past year. So the total applicants, total approved applicants. There was obviously some applications that maybe weren't approved, but at the bottom you'll see that note that the applications not approved include incomplete applications, ineligible applications, and withdrawn. So it's a combination. So this is something in a program we're really proud of, and it's made huge differences in our community. And it was something we intentionally did because we wanted to support our communities to be able to do great things, because I think we have a lot of really great spaces and places and people doing things, and to be able to support them in their communities to do what they want to do, I think is really important and something we should all be proud of. This is simply to highlight, for example, the amount of time that our staff spend implementing programs. So just simply for personal training, you saw earlier we had 67 packages sold, but that equates to just implementing those appointments for those packages is 231 hours, and that doesn't include planning, updating, spending time researching. So they spend a lot of time and put a lot of effort into the programs that they offer, and they're really well received. One we're really proud of is our Youth Fit program, where we introduced youth to the fitness center safely so that they can continue and have good habits. Matt, actually, who's back with us as our fitness coordinator, he was actually an original Queen's Place staff member, and so he took a hiatus for 7 years and then realized how wonderful we were and had to come back. So he's back, and he actually put this program in place back when he was here the first time, and it's just been really great to see the amount of kids and the difference that it's made to them feeling comfortable and welcome. This is just some arena highlights for things that came back this year. So Our Liverpool Lady Cougar soccer team has a tournament each year. Last year they had to change it a bit because of COVID. This year it's coming back full force. And we have Fall Skate that's hosted by Queens County Blades. We have the Jack Frost tournament hosted by Queens County Minor Hockey. And the Gary Wenzel tournament that's coming up in March on March break. And that's hosted by South Shore Minor Hockey. That primarily goes to the LCLC and Lunenburg because those are their two arenas. But we get the ice they can't book other places. But we still get quite a bit of ice. And just some Queens Place projects and successes. We had our Olympic wall. We're in the process of finishing our Queens Place website update, fitness-specific promotions, and we focused on more longer-term to get people back after COVID, which have been successful. We did some radio promotion, which we haven't done in the past, facility contracts and agreements. Not only are we having more agreements, but we're having more requests again, so that's a really good sign of things, I think, coming back and people, you know, getting out again. Arena advertising, 99% sold, 80 plus advertising opportunities there. We did free summer programming that was sponsored by our Mayor Community Grant. We did accessibility upgrades, not necessarily all this exact last year, but we did stair railings, we did automatic door openers, signage and washroom upgrades. And both our fitness and ice rentals are coming back to pre-COVID levels, if not higher, which is great to see. And special events are also all coming back. So those are all positive things. And I'm happy to say I didn't have to have a single slide about COVID. That's a thing in the past. I'm gonna go.
Are there any questions of Ms. Roberts or Ms. Howard? Yes, Councillor Gidney.
On the Olympic wall, I understand that there's a couple individuals that are not on the wall. Is there something in place that is being looked at? So
continuously
that
looked at, yep. And Steve's working on, to my understanding, a few more at this time, yep.
I've been approached because there's one member that was in the 76 Montreal Olympics.
Yeah,
that's not on the wall. I'm just wondering, is that, so when would that happen?
They get added?
Yes.
So that falls under Steve Burns, would be our manager.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. My suggestion would be anyone that is missing or that names that get brought to you, if you send it to him, he goes through the whole process, and that's something that my understanding will be done each year.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Councillor Amaro.
Thanks for your presentation. We offer public showers during the summer when it's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Dry.
Yeah.
Has there been any discussion with the housing situation to offer public showers year-round?
Yeah, so we had an inquiry, and I actually tried contacting the lady who had contacted me, but haven't got a call back about it. So I think we need to understand more exactly what the need is. Obviously, it's a bit harder. During the summer, our usage is a bit less, so we can take an entire dressing room, and we dedicate it just to that. But during the winter, it's harder to do that, especially during the evenings when we have ice usage, because we normally use all six dressing rooms plus the female dressing room. But if we can understand the need and usage and times of day, I mean, we're certainly willing to look into providing that support however we can. Yeah, for sure.
Any other questions?
So I was involved with Kim at the West Queens Rec Center. The physical activity thing, and if I wouldn't have found out about it the day that it was happening, I called probably seven people. She only would have had one person there. So most of the people that come there said we have a problem with our website. They go on the website, they can't find it. You know, we've been hearing this I don't know how many times. What are we going to do about a website? You know, we can keep having all these meetings and nobody knows about them, or are we going to fix it? You know, that's what the people are saying. We've got to make it user-friendly, and it's not user-friendly. I mean, it was a good turnout, you know. I'm glad that I did call people there. You know, I found out there's a lot of stuff going on. We missed the advance. The advance was one of the biggest things to help people find out what's going on in the community. I don't know what we can do to make it better, but our website isn't helping. The other thing, too, I see Steve Burns. You know, he does special events, advertising, promotions. He's got 99% of the advertisements done, he said. Other regions have people looking for grants. Why couldn't we give this to Steve now? He's got, you know, all the promotions and everything done. Let him take care of looking for grants. It's promotions and advertising, so I don't know why we can't have him be on the grant campaign.
And I mean, I can't speak to that, but I can speak to the things that are in here were just in relation to Queen's Place. So there's obviously other functions of his position that would fall under economic development that certainly wouldn't have been highlighted here. But that's.
Councillor Brown.
I'd just like to respond to Councillor Muse that Councillor Charlton and I are on the Communications Committee, and we've started the process to look at how we can get communications better out to the community. It's an ongoing process. We've only had the first meeting, but we've recognized some of the shortcomings that we have in our communications, and we're going to look at ways to deal with them.
Thank you, and I'm aware of that because that was brought forward as an issue and is being completely looked at, our entire communication.
And also on the note about the advertising, so that's kind of like a continuous yearly thing. So just because it's sold for this year, so we resell them again, so there's always turnover every year. So that happens again this coming, like, for budget year, so that's kind of like an ongoing.
And Councillor Charlton, did you have a comment about the communications?
I just had a question. I was just wondering, as far as, like, the event that was held in West Queens and at the Thomasford Hall Library, I don't know how each department does this when they have things, but would you have considered, or maybe you did as a question, the Queen's Crown? Like, everything is getting put in that. I know it doesn't come out weekly, but if your plans, if you have these plans, you know, a few months ahead, would you be able to utilize that so that more people would become aware? Because people are very much gravitating to that. I have to find out what's going on. Just a question.
No, it's definitely something I can look into.
Okay.
I know Dana had sent out to our emailing list, so, and then post on Facebook.
Okay.
And that's certainly something, to your point, looking forward for next year, how we can do better, because we're always looking to be better.
Yeah.
So we'll put that on our list for sure of things to consider whenever we're doing anything. And Kim's trying to work on a few other ideas, better ways to communicate what's going on as well, not just our things, but just things are in the communities, because I think some people just aren't aware even what happens in their community, so we're looking at those too.
It is 10:25, and I'm going to call a 5-minute recess, speaking of move more, because I think everyone needs to stand up and stretch, and then we're going to have another 1.5